IQ skill number 4, automatic trust. What are the 5 keys to believability in such a skeptical world? Unfortunately, we live in a day and age when people are more skeptical and more mistrustful than ever before. 20 years ago, the mindset was, I trust you, give me a reason not to. Now the mindset is, I don't trust you, give me a reason why I should. You could say trust is at an all-time low and still falling. Gone are the days where there was always a baseline of trust, no matter where you were coming from. A Gallup poll found that the majority of people feel you can't be too careful when dealing with others. Another study found that only 4% of respondents felt complete trust in any of the persuaders they had conducted business with in the last 24 months. Trust is critical in persuasion. What does this mean for you as a persuader? It means you cannot assume that people trust you. This assumption is one of the most common persuasion mistakes. Many persuaders think that because they are friendly or good at helping people feel comfortable, they will automatically be trusted. Studies show that nothing could be further from the truth. One study conducted by the Persuasion Institute monitored persuasive situations and then asked both audience and persuaders how much trust was established between the two. Only 12% of the audience members trusted their persuaders, while 88% of the persuaders felt that they had established trust with their audience. It is safer to assume that your audience lumps you in with the rest of the world that they don't trust. Don't take for granted that trust exists. You must work to earn and develop a trust that is instant, genuine, and lasting. So, contrary to what you may think, the studies show that most people do not trust you. This tendency brings us back to the woebegone effect. Most persuaders rate themselves very high in trust, but their audience does not reciprocate their trust level. Trust is usually the most lopsided perception persuaders have. Great persuaders know this and cultivate the ability to earn and maintain trust. Without trust, your persuasion techniques will be useless. As the Irish proverb says, it's no use carrying an umbrella if your shoes are leaking. Think about it. You could have the greatest product in the world, but if there's no trust, there is no persuasion. And I know trust can be an ambiguous concept, but certain things are quite clear. First of all, you can't get others to trust you unless you first trust yourself. And number 2, your message will not be convincing to others unless it's convincing to you. Whenever someone tries to influence us, in our minds we ask ourselves, can I trust this person? Do I believe him? Is she really concerned about me? We are less likely to be influenced if we sense that the person trying to persuade us is driven solely by self-interest. Trust is the glue that holds the entire persuasion process together. Trust is created when you put your audience's interests and wants before your own. For some people, trust is a leap of faith. They simply want to believe in the persuader's intentions. Research shows that deep down, people want and need to trust others. If you can't assume that your audience automatically trusts you, then your next focus should be on how to acquire this sense of trust as early on in the persuasion process as possible. To do this, it is helpful to understand how trust works. Most people can't explain why they trust certain people more or less than others. The same goes for companies. Usually there's a lot of rational thought behind it. More often, it's an instinct or feeling about a particular person, a company, or organization. Your audience does the same thing with you. They feel you out, trying to discern whether or not they can trust you and how much. Remember, it's a sliding scale. This means that you want to be perceived as trustworthy right away before your audience members even know you. Because fair or not, they're already starting to make judgment calls about you. Then you can demonstrate that this trustworthiness is genuine through your correspondence and interaction. Gaining and keeping trust for both the short term and the long term is vital to your success as a persuader. There are some instances in which the importance of trust is magnified even more. Being aware of these situations can help you devote more effective attention and energy to establishing and developing trust. Consider these situations. First time you've met somebody, there's a misunderstanding or misconception about your industry, or maybe the audience has never heard about you or your product. The company is unknown to the audience, or the audience considers the purchase price to be expensive. You or your company makes the first contact, or maybe the company you represent has a poor history. Trust is also magnified or diminished based on your occupation or profession. For example, medical professionals enjoy higher trust levels than lawyers do. An individual's general trust level with a certain industry or profession is dictated not only by experience, but also largely by rumor and reputation. Even if they don't have a direct experience with it, The Persuasion Institute conducted various polls in which the general trust levels of direct professions were surveyed. In a 5-year time period, we saw the trust level generally fall across the board by almost 6%. The greatest drop was by more than 15%. Trust levels in some fields stay the same, while actually a few experience small gains. So at the Persuasion Institute, we go through each industry where they rank on the trust scale. Now, we don't have the time to go through each one, but let's talk about the top of the list. Who's usually up there? Well, you usually see pharmacists, firefighters, and nurses. Bottom of the list, usually network marketers, used car sales. I'm not saying that it's fair, it's reality. If you want to know where your industry ranks in trust, give us a call at the Persuasion Institute at 801-434-4022, and we'll be happy to give it to you. And as Bob Berg says, all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. What about companies? Are they trusted? What affects their trust? Established small businesses enjoy greater trust than major companies. Large companies, however, experience a higher trust level than entrepreneurial startups. That said, there has been a 38% drop in trust of major companies over the last 40 years. So what are the consumers looking for when it comes to trusting a company? The Persuasion Institute's research shows that the most important aspects that determines whether a company can be trusted are, in this order, personal experience, feedback from family and friends, knowledge of the company or the industry, and the fourth, advertising and marketing. And according to Harris polls, these and other additional areas serve to develop trust when dealing with companies. They found that if a company's customer service department or website is responsive, 96% were more likely to trust that company. If they were to believe a company's product didn't deliver in some way, they felt that the company should make it up to them. That was 80%. They also said, if I try a new brand and it doesn't work or doesn't meet my needs, I will find it difficult to trust that brand again. That's at 76%. Now, when they talk about the companies, they say, I can't really explain why I trust certain companies more than others. There are just some companies at which I have a good feeling. 60% said that. They also said, I am more likely to trust products from companies that have effective leadership or people I respect in management positions. That's 56%. And then 48% said, I will not trust any products from a company that supports issues I don't believe in. So what is it that causes trust? What I want to talk about is the 5 C's of trust. We have already established that we cannot assume we are trusted as persuaders. If we want to master persuasion, we have to proactively ensure that trust is established not only in our initial contacts, but that it remains intact for the long term. Now, I want to give you the 5 essential keys to building instant, genuine, lasting trust. And I call these the 5 C's of trust: character, competence, confidence, credibility, and congruence. If any one of these 5 C's is missing, you diminish your ability to gain trust, which ultimately means you will not have lasting persuasion. So let's take some time and examine each of the 5 C's of trust that great persuaders have mastered. The first one is character. Well, character is the combination of qualities that distinguish one person from another. These qualities make up who you are on the inside, not the external front you may sometimes put up. Who are you? I mean, really, what do you do when no one is watching? What do you do when there's no one to impress? How do you treat people when you don't need something from them? Is your character made up of such qualities as integrity, honesty, sincerity, and predictability? I consider solid character to be at the very foundation of one's ability to succeed. No success is going to be profound or lasting in its effect if it stems from questionable ethics, motives, or behaviors. In his best-selling book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen Covey offers a powerful explanation for how character is crucial to one's ultimate success. He says, quote, if I try to use human influence strategies and tactics of how to get other people to do what I want, to work better, to be more motivated, to like me and each other, while my character is fundamentally flawed, marked by duplicity or insincerity, then, in the long run, I cannot be successful. My duplicity will breed distrust. And everything I do, even using so-called good human relation techniques, will be perceived as manipulative. It simply makes no difference how good the rhetoric is or even how good the intentions are. If there is little or no trust, there is no foundation for permanent success. Unquote. Newsweek magazine published its findings about character in the workplace. I was surprised to read from the report that today's workers are more tolerant of deception. Many workers feel that lying and cheating are acceptable. Newsweek's findings do not stand alone. Another survey found that nearly half of the workers surveyed engaged in unethical or illegal acts. And here's yet another example. I found in my personal training of persuaders that many will openly admit that they wish their integrity were better. What is my point? This disregard for honesty and sincerity is prevalent. But it always catches up with you. People can sense falsehood, deception, or insincerity. Even if they don't pick up on it right away, time will tell. The Latin root word of the word sincerity is sinceris, which means without wax. You see, pillar sculptors often use wax to hide their mistakes, so they could pass their work off as unflawed. Years of weathering, however, eventually revealed their deception. As a result, a sincere person was considered to be one without wax or camouflage. It is the same with people. Deception that we may deem as harmless may get us short-term results, but will not give us long-term lasting results. It will also taint others' opinions of us. The worst thing for a persuader is that your audience members probably won't even confront you about your dishonesty or deception. They're not going to tell you that they think you're lying. They'll just never work with you again. And they'll then tell their family and friends about the bad experience they had behind your back. I love what Helen Keller said when she said, quote, "Character cannot be developed in ease and quiet. Only through the experience of trial and suffering can the soul be strengthened, vision cleared, ambition inspired, and success achieved." Unquote. Even if you're an honest person of great character, it is human nature for people to cast sweeping judgments and formulate opinions without all the facts. So if you want genuine trust and lasting persuasion, you must avoid even the slightest appearance of anything that might be considered dishonest. If you never place yourself in a situation where one might be misled about you or your integrity, then your good, hard-earned reputation will never be compromised. Phillips Brook, a 19th century clergyman, taught, quote, "Character is made up in the small moments in our lives," unquote. Remember in those small moments to be caring, honest, and forthcoming. Don't embellish the story to make it sound better. Don't omit certain information to cover your own skin. Put the interests of others ahead of your own and keep your priorities straight. In all these things, exercise self-discipline, self-control, and self-mastery. Character is knowing what is right, desiring to do right, and then doing what's right. As that Chinese proverb says, clear conscience never fears midnight knocking. Abraham Lincoln stands as a worthy role model for anyone who wants to develop character. He once said, "When I lay down the reins of this administration, I want to have one friend left, and that friend is inside myself." This statement is interesting, given that Lincoln was criticized so viciously while he was in office. Nevertheless, he always remained true to what he believed in his heart was right and just. The next C is competence. Now, competence is your knowledge and your ability in a particular area. True competence comes from lifelong learning and experience. Competency exists on many levels. When we are observing someone from a distance, or when we're meeting them for the first time and our experience with them is very limited, we subconsciously perceive and assign them a certain competency level. These assumptions are usually based on external things, such as title, their position, their height, how they dress, their demeanor, which kind of car they drive, the decor of their home and office, how they talk, their tone of voice, how they carry themselves, or even things like what kinds of electronic devices they use. These initial impressions are important because they influence whether or not someone will pursue working with you. But then you have to be sure you possess true competence, not just perceived competence. Can you really do what you say you can do? Can you deliver? Does your audience think you have the skills, the knowledge, and the resources? Whether or not you have a deeper level of confidence becomes glaringly obvious as people interact and work with you. One of the key ways to keep your competency on track is to be a lifetime learner. We consider others to be competent when we see them continually learning and advancing their training and education. I can remember going to buy computer products and discovering that I knew more about the computer products than the sales rep did, and I don't know that much. In an attempt to cover up their lack of knowledge, these ill-informed salespeople tried to bluff their way through my questions. If they had kept themselves educated about the product, the field, and the industry, then they would have not lost my trust in them as competent professionals and they would have not lost a customer for life. Learn to become the best in your field. Demonstrate that it is your area of expertise. You should know more about your subject than 99% of the population. So how can you gain and strengthen your competence? Remember, competence is either real or perceived. Degrees, professional standing, your affiliations with respected organizations, publications, referrals, endorsements, reputations, the external surroundings of your home or your office, having a definite opinion, using testimonials, and displaying passion. These are all critical to competence. Now your next C is confidence. According to J. Conrad Levinson of Guerrilla Marketing fame, confidence is the number one reason people are persuaded to buy. Confidence triggers trust. Demonstrating confidence in everything you do increases others' abilities to place their trust in you. I've seen plenty of people of only average to mediocre ability persuade and influence more effectively than others who were more naturally gifted simply because they exuded greater confidence. The people we admire and look up to the most are usually the type of people who know what they want and how to get it. Can you think of a time when you went to buy something and your sales rep seemed uneasy? I'm sure you felt less eager to buy, even if you originally fully intended on making the purchase. People who lack confidence will always struggle to effectively influence others. If you are perceived as doubtful or underconfident, your audience will feel that way too, about your product, about your idea, or about anything else you might ever try to present to them. Now, don't panic if you don't feel that full confidence 100% of the time. Complete confidence in oneself takes experience, time, practice, and patience. Since confidence is so critical, it's important to understand what hinders it. This could be all summed up in one word: fear. All doubts, questions, concerns, insecurities can all be traced back to fear in one form or another. Whether it's deeply hidden or right out on the surface, you need to make sure your confidence and your commitment to success are bigger than your fears. What does your audience sense? Are you afraid to pick up the phone and talk to people? If that is your fear, that's okay, but make that commitment to what you want to accomplish by making those phone calls. Overcoming your fright needs to be bigger than the fear itself. When you are afraid, that fear will breed doubt and suck the energy right out of you. While it's okay to have fear, you must have a game plan to handle and manage that fear. Consider these factors that inhibit your confidence and feed your fears: lack of belief, replaying those failures over and over and over again in your mind, destructive thoughts, worry, negative attitude, indecision, hesitation, and your mood. You may be wondering, if a persuader seems overly confident, can't that also hurt the ability to persuade? The answer is a resounding yes. It's not the confidence that you need to worry about. It's important that you do not come across as cocky or arrogant. How can you tell the difference? It's all about the intention. Confidence is motivated by sincere desire to serve, where you can help make a difference, and you know you can do a great job. You know you have the tools, resources, ability, and inclination to do the job that's required of you. Now, in contrast, cockiness is driven by the need to serve yourself instead of serving others. Deep down, cockiness actually reveals insecurity, the very opposite of confidence. The distinguishing feature seems to be intent. Cocky individuals seek approval, recognition, and honor from all the wrong sources, in all the wrong ways, and for all the wrong reasons. They are really looking for pats on their own back. Cockiness is self-centered, whereas confidence is people-centered. Now, here's the challenge. Many persuaders say they're confident, but the prospects say cocky. So how do you know? If you get any of these complaints, it's a red flag for having cocky or arrogant behavior. He acted like he owned the place. She treated me like a child. She did not listen to what I wanted. He didn't ask permission to. He blamed others. She did not own up to her mistake. He never answered my question. She always has to be right. He is arrogant and condescending. If your audience senses any pride or superiority, the game is over. Just the same as if you were not confident enough. It simply doesn't matter if you say and do all the right things. If you turn people off, it's a lost cause. If they don't like you, they will not allow themselves to be persuaded by you. So here are a few additional things to avoid the trap of coming across as too confident. always be open to feedback and criticism. Be willing to listen. Don't always do the talking. Admit when you're wrong. Be honest about strengths and weaknesses of your product and competing products. Never interrupt. Ask questions to demonstrate care and concern, and be sure you clearly understand your audience's needs and wants. Use external credibility instead of tooting your own horn. What's that? Testimonials, endorsements, or even referrals. The next C, credibility. When the Persuasion Institute polled respondents to see which one of the five C's they thought was the most important, 44% said credibility. And interestingly, despite the importance, respondents felt it was only established a little over 11% of the time. Why the dismal rating? Well, it's harder to gain credibility nowadays than it ever was in the past. Most consumers are fairly sophisticated and have grown cynical with all the hype that is thrown at them. People who've been burned in the past develop thick skins against almost every persuasive message they are exposed to. How do you overcome this lack of credibility? Well, let me give you a few ideas. Be sure your appearance is polished and professional. How do you look? How do you appear to your audience? Do you appear self-assured and in control of the situation? What about your eye contact? Use credible sources, facts, statistics, and stories to back up your claims. Cite the evidence, identify the sources, and give source qualifications. Maybe you'll be able to write and publish relevant articles or even publish a book. Next, research your audience. Be sure you speak in terms that are relevant to them. Demonstrate that you have their best interest in mind. Explain your background, expertise, and qualifications so your audience knows why you have the credibility to speak to them on this particular subject. Display, or maybe you can promote your qualifications as a means of conferring your status and expertise. Adopt a language and style that is suitable to the listener, the topic, and the setting. Watch out for those vocal fillers, you know. They detract from the message and your credibility. And make sure you use assertive language. You're able to emphasize your similarities in a way that makes them relevant to your audience. You see, listeners find it easier to identify with sources they perceive as similar to themselves. Use similar industries, colleges, home states, professional sport teams, anything that will strike a familiar chord. Have a reputable, and that would be in the eyes of your audience, not you, a reputable individual introduce you. Testimonials substantiate your expertise. Find third-party testimonials that endorse your position. Also, be prepared, be organized, and know your position. Make that great first impression. Make sure your presentation is rehearsed and polished, and know that you need to educate, inspire, and entertain with passion, compassion, and purpose. Make sure any printed material or literature you hand out has been carefully proofread and is presented in a neat and professional manner. Nothing detracts from your credibility more than a sloppy supplemental material. Make sure all your material is appropriate and understandable. Be prompt. People who are always showing up late are considered less competent, less composed, and less sociable than people who arrive on time. There's your laundry list. Now understand you have to be careful in how you explain and exhibit your credibility. If you launch into an extensive list of your accomplishments or of your education and titles, you might be perceived as a braggart. Take advantage of a less direct or less self-proclaiming ways to show your prospects how competent you are. For example, you can hang your degrees on the wall, have someone else give a brief bio, or have someone else offer his recommendation of you. Remember this, you can borrow credibility from others using a testimonial or a statement from them. Credibility can also be defined as having expertise, trustworthiness, goodwill, sociability, composure, or expertise. Trust builds with dependability. You have a track record. Are you a person of your word? When you make an appointment, are you there on time? When you commit to doing something for someone, does it get done as promised, or do you think they're going to forget? When you make a promise, do you make sure it's kept? Or are you full of excuses and alibis? Be reliable and follow through with all your promises. Credibility is the single biggest variable under a speaker's control during the presentation. Another way to boost your credibility is to present yourself in a calm, organized, and authoritative manner. Being overly emotional or flustered throws your credibility right out the window. Consider the most highly successful attorneys or CEOs. No matter how rushed or pressured they are, You don't ever see them running into a room, slamming their stuff on the table, and throwing themselves into the chairs. They are absolutely composed at all times. That's because they must always convey an air of authority and control. Jury studies show that lawyers who appear well-organized are thought of as being more thorough and better prepared than their disorganized counterparts, which of course increases their credibility. So how do you know if you have credibility? Well, if your prospects are doing anything I'm going to mention, you need to check your credibility. Calling in and complaining. Failing to give you the repeat business. Exhibiting no loyalty. Needing outside testimonials. Needing references. Not returning calls. Or even canceling appointments. Another way to boost credibility is to be honest about your product's weaknesses and how it compares with the competition. Your audience is looking for a weakness, so give them one. If you don't give them a weakness, they will assign one to you. You don't want to trigger the knee-jerk reaction of your audience. Thinking about what you have to offer is too good to be true. Revealing a weakness tends to make people view you as more honest and trustworthy than those who try to cover up a product's faults. Great persuaders can even turn weaknesses into selling points. Think of the following examples. Avis, the rental car company. We're number two, weakness, and we try harder. Listerine, weakness being it's nasty. The taste you hate twice a day kills the germs. Strength. 7-Up, weakness, it's not a cola. That is their strength, the uncola. L'Oreal, makeup, weakness, it's expensive. Strength, they say, because I'm worth it. VW Bug in the 60s, their weakness is it was a different looking car, but they would actually say VW will stay ugly longer. Okay, they make fun of it. They turn the weakness into a strength. They've even said this car's so slow, you'll never get a speeding ticket. Strength. Heinz ketchup. Weakness, it takes forever to pour out. Strength, it's so thick and it pours so slowly because of the quality. Smucker's, weakness, that's a weird name for a jam. They make fun of their name. They say, with a name like Smucker's, it's got to be good. So when you can reveal a weakness, your audience is going to appreciate that you're open and frank. You never want to appear defensive or like you're avoiding your audience on the issue at hand. Let them understand your thinking process. Now, I'm not saying you need to disclose everything about your product or service. What I am saying is that you need to provide a reason why you are doing what you're doing. Be willing to share the information your audience needs and wants. Trustworthiness increases when we are big enough to own up to our mistakes and weaknesses. People can forgive weaknesses, but they won't be as quick to forgive cover-ups. Oftentimes, if a persuader is open about a weakness or a drawback in a particular product, he or she still seals the deal. Often, your honesty will be a characteristic that will win people over. In the end, it is better to risk rejection than to hide something your audience will later find out on their own. If your audience is only hearing positive angles from you, you could lose credibility. You run the risk of triggering the knee-jerk reaction of, oh, that's too good to be true, and they run. At the Persuasion Institute, I've analyzed thousands of client offers. One common theme among many of the deals that we're not selling is that they appeared too good to be true. While the offers may have been legit, your audience just did not buy into them. When we weakened the offers in the right way, adding the law of contrast, sales increased. Now, when I talk about admitting a weakness, I'm not talking about listing previous felonies or major faults. I'm not talking about admitting something so severe it will damage your credibility and cause your clients to run. When you are able to open up or disclose potential weaknesses or red flags about your product, however, your credibility always increases when you do it the right way. When you can admit a mistake, show a vulnerability, or point out potential roadblocks, your audience will open up and you will experience increased credibility and trust. We know that lying decreases your credibility. Most persuaders think that only when they are caught in a lie by their audience does it decrease their credibility. We have found that most people will not call you on a lie. They will sense it, mentally record it, and simply won't come back. You thought you'd get away with it, but they still sense it. Whatever you want to call it, lying, fibbing, fabrication, or deception, it still decreases your overall trustworthiness. As you know, and I've mentioned before, a confused mind says no. A related danger is that when you don't provide any additional forms of credibility, the audience will base all their opinions of credibility on you, the communicator. And the more involved your audience is emotionally or financially in the topic that you're going to present to them, the harder it will be to establish credibility. High involvement increases skepticism, and it is credibility that will decrease the skepticism. An audience with low involvement in a particular issue is more likely to defer to other sources because it requires less mental strain or emotional investment than trying to figure it out for themselves. So let's talk about how social validation increases and influences credibility. You see, a big part of how we determine whether something or someone is credible or not is by social validation. Great persuaders have mastered social validation. We look to friends, family, neighbors, coworkers, even strangers, basically anyone around us besides a persuader, for cues to what is acceptable and correct. Very often, this validation has a stronger impact than even a formal marketing campaign. A recent Roper report demonstrates that there is a significant difference between credibility established via word of mouth versus formal advertising. For example, restaurants to try, places to visit, hotels to stay in, which brands are best, retirement planning, saving and investing money, finding the best buys, appearance of a home, computer equipment, or even websites to visit. What I'm saying is formal advertising doesn't even come close to convincing people or offering credibility versus word of mouth. Social validation plays a major role in what we believe constitutes standard behavior. We see a behavior as more correct when we see others doing it. Who else is using this product or service? Whether the question is what to do with an afternoon off, the movie to see, how fast to drive in the city, or what to order in a restaurant, the social validation of others gives us our answers and guides our actions. Your audience learned early in life that they make fewer mistakes when they follow social standards. How does this concept pertain to you right now as a persuader? When your product or service is socially validated, your credibility increases. Period. The more testimonials and outside validation you can find, the better. Is your product or service the best selling? The most popular? Used by the most elite? The fastest growing? Is it part of a trend? Is it an industry standard? Who uses it? The answer to these types of questions can help you determine how to best position yourself for maximum credibility. And last but not least, congruence. Great persuaders are congruent. But what is congruence? When things match. We don't notice. Congruence is when your words match your actions. Agreement and harmony between what you say and what you do are paramount to instilling trust in those you work with. The more consistent and congruent you are in every aspect of your life, the more honest and genuine you are perceived to be. If you believe in your message, you'll practice what you preach. If you practice what you preach, you'll be more authentic. And the door of trust will swing wide open for you. When you possess congruency, there's no need to manipulate or camouflage your behavior. An interesting study was conducted with dentists where they put an ad in the local newspaper asking people to participate in a painful dental procedure. The first amazing thing about the study is that people actually showed up. During the first part of the study, the dentists were told that they would only pretend to use a painkiller on their patients. A placebo would actually be given. The dentists were instructed to do everything just as they would normally do during the procedure. Most of the patients in this half of the study felt pain during their dental procedure. During the second half of the study, the dentists were told to perform the exact same procedure, except this time they would be administering a real painkiller to their patients. When told that the dentist was going to numb their mouths, most of these patients did not feel pain. Now follow me here. Here's the reality. The dentist did not know that they were using a placebo again instead of the painkiller. Even though in the dentist's mind they had performed the exact same procedure with both sets of patients, the first group of patients picked up on incongruencies in the doctor's behavior. Consciously or subconsciously, they knew something was wrong and thus felt pain. Are you congruent with your history, your last interaction, and your reputation? Does your nonverbal behavior match your actions? Are your emotions congruent with your message? What are your audience's expectations of you and your message? When your past history and message don't match, flags of incongruity will wave in your audience's face. Suspicion will be aroused, and your audience will start to look for things that are wrong with you or your message. This inconsistency will decrease your ability to gain influence and trust. That's because humans are natural lie detectors. When we attempt to fake congruence, we must also spend our time and energy trying to fake our message. What are some of the nonverbal behaviors that will trigger incongruence and a sense of deception? Forced eye contact, things like shifting back in the chair, rubbing your lips, touching your face, dilated pupils, yawning, the pitch of your voice. Be congruent. Now understand, you have to have all five C's for powerful, lasting trust. During this audio, we've looked at trust and its role in the persuasion process in depth. We've talked about the five critical components that we call the five C's of trust. To review, character, competence, confidence, credibility, and congruence. For powerful, lasting trust, all five C's are essential. Gaining trust is like having a car that's finely tuned. The engine and all the components work together harmoniously. None of the five C's will carry you where you need to go without the others. Let me use a story to illustrate how these elements work together. Imagine you're experiencing extreme tooth pain. You put off going to the dentist as long as possible, but now nature is telling you your time has run out. You've recently moved, so your previous dentist is 1,400 miles away and no longer an option. So you start asking new friends and neighbors about their dentist, and you get the following five responses. First, "Oh, my dentist has great character. He belongs to my church group. He's one of the most honest people I know. He's not very competent, though. I heard he's famous for sticking a needle completely through your cheek. Would you trust this dentist?" Or number two, "My dentist went to one of the top dental schools in the country, and he's one of the top dentists in the state. He's extremely competent, but he has no character. In fact, you'll have to wait 2 months before you can see him because he's in prison for insurance fraud. Would you go to this dentist when he gets out?" Number three, "Oh, my dentist is a really great guy. He's a good-hearted person, and he always does exactly what he says he's going to do. But he doesn't have much confidence in his work. One time he said to me, I've just never really been good at reading x-rays. I'm not sure whether I should give you a root canal or just leave the tooth alone. Would you go to this dentist, or would you run away as far as possible?" Number four, "I'm not sure if my dentist is licensed. I didn't see any degree or diplomas on his wall, and no one seems to know where he went to school. His office doesn't have the latest equipment. He doesn't take insurance, and I always have to pay cash instead of writing a check. But he does seem really credible. Would you go to this dentist?" Probably not. And number five, "My dentist is a nice guy, but he doesn't keep his story straight. There's something about what he says and how he acts that doesn't seem right. He tells me one thing and I feel something else. I don't think I'm getting the whole truth. It just doesn't feel right. He tells you one thing one time and another thing another time. You never know which one is right. He's not congruent. Would you go to this dentist?" I don't think so. See, I'm sure you would spend more time trying to find a dentist who met all five criteria before you'd resort to one who lacked one of the five C's of trust. If a person is lacking in just one of these areas, every aspect of his or her ability to build, gain, and maintain trust will be affected. As a persuader, never assume that people trust you. Always show your audience that you are someone to be trusted, no matter the circumstances. So in closing of this audio, I want to review some behaviors that are harmful to building trust. And ask yourself, can you improve in any of these areas? Ignoring promises, being unreliable, over-promising and under-delivering, covering up failures and weaknesses, blaming others, using emotion without logic, shifting responsibility, any form of apathy, being inaccessible, never apologizing, gossiping or telling half-truths, hiding your mistakes, assuming that people completely trust you, presenting an offer that's too good to be true, embellishing to make your point, or being emotional and unpredictable. So let me just finish up with a fable about the fox that lost his tail. It happened one day that a fox caught his tail in a trap, and in the struggle to free himself, he lost his tail, leaving behind an ugly stump. At first, he was ashamed to show himself to his fellow foxes, But at last he determined to put a better face upon his bad luck and called all the foxes to a meeting to consider a new proposal. When they had assembled together, the fox proposed that they should all do away with and cut off their tails. He pointed out how inconvenient a tail was when being pursued by enemies, especially dogs, and how much a tail got in the way when a fox wanted to sit down and hold a conversation with others. He failed to see any advantage in carrying out such a useless thing. "That is all very well," said one of the wiser foxes, "but I don't think you should have recommended us to dispense with our chief ornament if you had not happened to lose it yourself." "What's the meaning?" "Your audience is always wondering what's in it for you. Can they trust you? Why are you dispensing advice? Should they trust you? Would you do what you're asking them to do?" Trust is critical. It doesn't matter if you have the best product and the best offer or the best price. If they don't trust you, they're not going to do business with you.